Camelot Podcast. It is the Observations with Big Jim. I am your host, Big Jim, and this is number 28 of this version of the Crazy World of Huddle Up Podcast. If you're not paying attention or you're not following along with us, you can do so at Huddle Up Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, and get our merchandise over at tpublic.com. Subscribe on all podcast platforms. You can get me at Big Jim Sports. But please do. We have a ton of content, not just this show, not just our weekly Huddle Up podcast, with the whole circus of characters that we have on the show. We have these observations. We have the FKC Fantasy Hour. Mikey's going to be starting up the Five for Fighting here as the NHL season getting underway. Ernest, maybe, possibly, hopefully, we'll be getting And One back in business. So we have plenty of content to cover all the bases, so to speak, pun intended, in the sports world. So make sure you are you're getting in on that and subscribe to it and tell everyone that you think should get involved and hang out with us on a weekly basis. So we would certainly appreciate that. As I'm recording this, it is top eight between the Orioles and the Rangers. The Rangers are going to advance to the American League Championship Series tonight. More on that later. My thoughts on the Orioles and their season I'll be talking about here in a second. But my first observation of the week, and this one kind of stinks. We talked about it at length on this week's Huddle Up podcast, so I'm not going to go super crazy on this one on here, but the Dallas Cowboys are what haters say they are. And it pains me to say it, but I don't have any evidence on the contrary this week, because the haters, Cowboys haters, regularly say that they are this team that, you know, is good against bad teams, but they can't win big games. And this past Sunday in Santa Clara, they did exactly that. They spent the entire offseason retooling things. They got rid of Kellen Moore. They got rid of Ezekiel Elliott. They added pieces on the defense. They added pieces on the offense. Mike McCarthy was going to call the plays. They said that the lineup they were building was to win games specifically against the 49ers. Dak Prescott said that in press conferences last week. The Cowboys players have talked about this throughout the summer and throughout the offseason. And then they come out on Sunday and they get embarrassed. My bigger problem in this isn't that the Cowboys lost. It's how they lost. It's how they lost against the Cardinals. It's another one in a series of games that the Dallas Cowboys look unprepared for, unmatched for, outcoached, outplayed, out-quarterbacked, out-defended. Just everything. They were close to the Niners in the playoffs last year, and they had the injury to Tony Pollard, and so many people talked about, well, that was such a big injury, it was such a huge part of the offense. Pollard's healthy. The offensive line's healthy. The defense, minus Trayvon Diggs, healthy. But now here we are, two losses in the last 3 weeks in embarrassing fashion, one to the best team in football right now, one to the Arizona Cardinals. So I don't know how the Cowboys fix this, because they told us they fixed it in the offseason. They told us that they fixed it before this season started, that they were ready for the big moment. They were ready for games like this. And now, as a Cowboys fan, I'm left to just go, well, here we are again. Well, this is who we are again. Or this is who we still are, because I don't think we ever weren't that team. That was always our identity. Good, not great. Pretty good, not elite. And how do you fix it? I mean, without blowing everything up, which I don't know that this organization is capable of doing, one, because of Jerry Jones, and two, because how do you get rid of Dak Prescott's contract? Okay, so you get rid of Mike McCarthy. Then who do you bring in? Do you do another retread? Seems to be working out for Denver. Or do you go out and hire a younger coordinator? And if so, who is that guy? Who's the next Kyle Shanahan? Who's the next Zach Taylor? Who's the next, who's the next coaching star? Who's the next Nick Sirianni? I don't know what that answer is right now. A lot of question marks for the Cowboys moving forward. My second observation from this week, Notre Dame blew a golden chance Saturday in Louisville. Embarrassed. The word that I can use to describe my NFL team's loss is the same word I can use to describe my favorite college team's loss. Embarrassing. Embarrassing. And that's what it was. Notre Dame got outplayed, outcoached, outmatched by Louisville on the road. Sam Hartman was brought in to not be the guy he was on Saturday. I still think Sam Hartman's a hell of a quarterback, but apparently Louisville has some wizard magic against him because he's turned the ball over 10 times in two straight games against Louisville. Our offense, Notre Dame offense looked as basic bitch as can be. The defense looked exhausted. The defense looked like a unit who has played three tough physical games in a row. And that's exactly what they've done. Same with the offensive line. It's a team that looked like they were on week seven of seven in a row. And that's exactly what they were. There's a lot of what could have been with this team, and maybe even more so than a lot of Notre Dame teams, because 3 weeks ago you lost by three to Ohio State in a game that you were the better team, and I don't care. You can argue with me if you want. Notre Dame was the better team the second to last Saturday in September against the Ohio State Buckeyes. They were. Notre Dame, cliches aside, Notre Dame lost. Ohio State did not win. Sans one drive. A drive that probably shouldn't have been getting. Ohio State shouldn't have had the opportunity to make that drive. But what could have been? Because you could be sitting there with one loss, maybe none, after the hardest stretch of your season. Now you have two losses, and you have USC coming to town. And I know that USC's defense is not very good. I know that USC is only as good as Caleb Williams can carry them. But Notre Dame is playing their eighth straight week. They're playing their fourth straight primetime game. They're playing their fourth straight game against a top 25 opponent. And you can argue that one or two of those opponents shouldn't have been ranked or not. I'm not here to do that. I'm speaking fact. Fourth straight game in primetime against top 25 opponents. And as much as that sucks, that's what you're going to get sometimes at Notre Dame. That you're not going to get at Georgia. Yeah, I said it. Look at Georgia's schedule. Georgia hasn't had a gauntlet like this yet. I don't think they do the rest of the year because the SEC ain't that good this year. Georgia's better than Notre Dame, so calm down, Kyle. That's not what I'm saying. But this is the hardest stretch of college football that anybody has played this year, this four-game stretch. Again, not an excuse, just the fact. Notre Dame can win on Saturday. I don't necessarily truly believe that they will, which is disheartening because I really thought they could have. And then they finally get a bye week. And where do they go from here? I don't know. There's a reality that sits over this team right now, and it's that Marcus Freeman just coached his 21st game as a head coach. Notre Dame absolutely made the right choice hiring Marcus Freeman. When Brian Kelly left Notre Dame, hiring Marcus Freeman was the right choice. It is still the right choice. Regardless of what some Notre Dame fans may be saying, they're wrong. Marcus Freeman was and is the right choice right now for the University of Notre Dame. But the reality is he's coaching this Saturday in game number 22 of his career. That's a tall task. And there are going to be learning curves. The mistake with only getting 10 guys on the field against Ohio State at the end of the game. It's a mistake. It's a growing pain. Some of the mistakes they made with personnel this past weekend against Louisville. Again, head coach, second year, 21st game. This is what we signed up for, whether we knew it or not. And that's the reality of the situation. Marcus Freeman is a hell of a coach. Marcus Freeman is a great recruiter. So I don't know where Notre Dame goes from here, but I like where we are, despite the two losses. We're 5 weeks into the NFL season, and there's more questions than answers. The San Francisco 49ers are the best team in football. The Philadelphia Eagles are the second best team in football. The Patriots, the Broncos, the Giants, the Commanders, the Vikings, Panthers stink. Patriots stink. Teams that you expected to be really good, Bengals, Chiefs, have not been as good as we expected them to be. Lions 4-1. They look like you could already start printing the NFC North Championship t-shirts. Chargers don't look as good as we thought. Miami 4-1. There's some questions there. They haven't truly been tested, and they lost their first real test. The Bills are scrappy. The Jets, man, what could have been with the Jets? With old Ayahuasca Rogers now looking like a clown each and every fucking week on the Pat McAfee show. Seriously, challenging Travis Kelce to a vaccine debate. Here's the thing. Two fucking football players and RFK Jr. shouldn't be involved in a vaccine quote-unquote debate. Especially when Ayahuasca Rogers and RFK Jr. are fucking anti-vaxxers. But, yeah, keep hosting on your fucking bro show, Pat McAfee. That's cool. The AFC North is weird. Steelers on top. I don't think they're the best team. Ravens, Bengals, they're figuring it out. Browns, don't know what they are yet. But yeah, I think there's just a lot more questions than answers with the NFL right now. I think there's more bad or less than average football than there is above the line. I think there's only a few like good or great teams. And then there's a lot of others. But we're not even at the midway point yet. So a lot of this stuff is going to shake itself out. A lot of it is just preseason isn't even preseason anymore. I feel like the first 3 to 4 weeks of the regular season is almost preseason at this point. Reality bites for the Baltimore Orioles. As I'm recording this, it is bottom of the eighth. The Texas Rangers hosting the Orioles tonight, 7-1 currently. The season is three outs away from being over. And it's a bummer, man. It's a bummer. I thought the Orioles could have done more this round. I know a lot of people were like World Series, and I know I predicted them to win the World Series. That's what I wanted to see. Obviously, I wanted them to be in the World Series. I've never seen that in my life. Their last World Series appearance and victory was 2 years before I was born. So pardon me if I got a little excited, right? But they're gonna get swept by the Texas Rangers here unless a miracle happens at the top of the ninth. I thought the Orioles could have won games 1 and 2. They had the opportunities to. But a 9-run start to the Rangers in game 2, you left a lot of guys stranded in game one. Yeah, the Orioles, they look like a team playing their first playoff, their first time in the playoffs, being managed by a manager coaching, who's coaching in the playoffs for the first time, and that's okay. It's okay. This team lost 110 games 2 years ago. They won 101 games this year, with a lot of youth, new guys. They arrived early. I don't think people didn't expect the Orioles to make the playoffs, much less win the AL East. The irony of all this is I just got my AL East locker room t-shirt today. I broke my own rule. My rule has always been you don't buy the playoff or division champion gear until after the season is over. Why? Well, because if they win the league championship or the world championship, then you spent $40 on a t-shirt or whatever, $30 to $40 on a t-shirt that now is null and void. Not null and void, but it means less because of what they ultimately did. Like this past summer when the Hershey Bears went and won the Calder Cup, I didn't buy division champion shirts. I didn't buy conference champion shirts or hats. I waited until they won it all, and then I spent more money probably than I should have. But I broke a rule. Because I've only seen the Baltimore Orioles in the playoffs a handful of times in my life. I've seen them win the division less than that. I had never seen them win 100 games in a season. So I was absolutely going to break a rule because this year was a lot of fun. And they're only going to get better from here. I know a lot of baseball fans, particularly those in a southern city that rhymes with Atlanta, were complaining about the quote-unquote bye week with Major League Baseball. And what I mean is the Braves, the Dodgers, the Orioles, and the Astros all had a week off from the end of the regular season until the playoffs started because of the wild card series. The Orioles lost game one. The Braves lost game one. The Dodgers lost game one. The only bye week, quote-unquote, team that won was the Houston Astros. Game one. And a lot of Braves fans and other fans too were complaining because it's like, well, we're sitting around and these other teams are staying hot. And look, rest is supposed to be good, especially depending on your situation. If you have a team or a rotation, pitching rotation, that's a little beat up, a little tired from that playoff race, a rest should be okay. Now, granted, yeah, you're going to get a team that hasn't stopped, and they're going to keep playing, and they've probably been playing quote-unquote playoff-like baseball for the last 3 weeks of the season or more because they're trying to make that push for the wild card. So, yeah, it's maybe a little bit of a bummer that you sit around for a week. But the wild card play-in series with three wild card teams is infinitely better than what Major League Baseball did with a single wild card play-in game, because baseball is not based on games, it's based on series. So if you want to do away with this bye week, you don't go backwards, because that's what I've heard people say: go back to one wild card team or two, they play in, and one game in, and then we go. No, we don't go back to a play-in game. If you want to do this and you want to eliminate the bye week, you want to eliminate teams sitting around, here's my thought. Three division winners, three wild card teams. Lowest wild card team plays the number one division winner. Number two wild card team plays the second best division winner. And, well, I guess it'd be the number three, the third best division winner would play the number one seeded wild card, 2-2. And then the third wild card team, the lowest seed, would play the highest seeded division winner. So you have six teams. Everybody plays in the first round. Nobody's sitting around for a week. If you really want to, quote unquote, fix baseball, I don't think it's broken. Because guess what? The Braves, you could have won game one. The Orioles could have won game one. The Dodgers, you got your doors blown off. Sorry about your luck. The Astros won game one, okay? So one of the teams who were sitting around for a week won. Two of the other three could have. It's not the bye week, you didn't execute. NHL season starts this week. Actually started tonight as I'm recording this. And I'm excited for Capitals hockey. I'm excited for Alex Ovechkin to continue his chase of Wayne Gretzky's record. He will not hit it this year. I think it's 74 away. He's not going to hit 74 goals, okay? He's not. But I think a 40-plus or 40 or 50-plus goal season, and he is going to absolutely get it next year. He's got to stay healthy. Same thing I've been saying for about the last 5, 6, 7 years. As long as he stays healthy, it's going to be okay. And I'm excited for the Capitals. New head coach, Spencer Carberry. We're already seeing with some of the guys who have made the opening day roster. There's youth that are going to be given opportunity with the Washington Capitals this year, which has not been the case for the last handful or more. This was a big summer of change for the Capitals. What I will say about that is, similar to Notre Dame, there's going to be some growing pains. But I'm okay with that because Spencer Carberry, he was a hell of a coach for the Capitals ECHL affiliate in South Carolina. He was a hell of a head coach for the Capitals AHL affiliate in Hershey. I believe this team can be a playoff team. A wild card playoff team, but I would not be surprised if they miss the playoffs, and that's okay too. Odds for this year, currently the Colorado Avalanche are the betting favorite to win the Stanley Cup, at plus 850. Carolina Hurricanes are plus 900. Look, if it's not the Capitals, I say this every year, I hope and want it to be a team from Canada. The Edmonton Oilers have the highest odds of any Canadian team at plus 1,000, Toronto Maple Leafs at plus 1,100. But let it be a Canadian team, man. I think that'd be cool. It's been since 1994 since any Canadian team has won a Stanley Cup. I'd love it to be Toronto. I'd love it to be the Blues for my dad to see another Stanley Cup. I'd love to see Seattle Kraken because they're such a young team. But I'll go Oilers over Hurricanes, a rematch of what was that, the 98? No, it was like 2000. It was like late 90s, I think. Oilers and Hurricanes. But I'll go Oilers in six. Oilers in six. Along with the start of the NHL season, it was announced, it was reported yesterday that the NHL is banning the use of pride tape on player sticks this year in celebration of equality and LGBTQ plus participation in the sport. And this is something that's just really infuriating to me because hockey is my number one sport. And to see the NHL be the only league in the four major sports in the United States to be moving backwards on like human rights and equality stances, it sucks because it's not okay. This is a reactionary move by the NHL. The NHL sent a memo to teams last week clarifying that players cannot use pride tape. And it is such a disheartening move by this league. This comes after the NHL deciding in June teams would not allow teams to wear any theme jerseys for warmups this upcoming season after a handful of players opted out of wearing Pride Night jerseys during warmups last season. The league said players opting out of Pride Night served as a distraction to the work its teams were doing in the community. Commissioner Gary Bettman said in a statement in February at the All-Star game, he said, "You know what our goals, our values, and our intentions are across the league, whether it's at the league level or at the club level, but we also have to respect individual choices. Some people are more comfortable embracing themselves and causes than others. And part of being diverse and welcoming is understanding those differences." The Philadelphia Flyers' Ivan Provorov was the first player to not take part in Pride Night jerseys, wearing Pride Night jerseys last year. He did not skate in warmups, citing his Russian Orthodox religion. Six other players followed for a variety of reasons. Fellow Russians Ilya Lyubushkin, Denis Gurianov, Andrei Kuzmenko, Canadians James Reimer and Eric and Mark Stahl. Individual teams then catered. The Rangers, Minnesota Wild, Chicago Blackhawks decided to not have any players wear pride jerseys in warm-up. The makers of Pride Tape, which is a rainbow-colored tape that players would use on their stick during these Pride Nights, they released a statement saying the Pride team is extremely disappointed in the NHL's decision. Despite the setback, we are encouraged for what lies ahead based on our recent conversations from every corner of the sport. Maple Leafs defenseman Morgan Riley told reporters in Toronto he wished players had the right to do more and be more involved. He said, "I'm going to continue to be involved in the community and offer support to those communities and those groups that want and need that." This to me feels like the NHL saying that they are supporting individual choices feels like they're catering to bigots. You can disagree with me on that statement, but my issue is that a lot of these players are citing religious reasons. And I am a religious person. I believe in God. I believe in the Christian God. But in the same time, I understand that, you know, if I'm asked by my organization to wear a pride jersey during warm-ups before a game that gets auctioned to charities that help in the community in which I play my games and those people pay my salary, it doesn't mean I am condoning everything that jersey stands for. It means it's part of a uniform for a game day game. I also didn't see any of these players not wearing things like military night warm-up jerseys. Because I'm sure if you really dig down deep into some of their religions, and the only one listed there is the Russian Orthodox. I'm not a Russian Orthodox historian, but I would probably venture a guess that they are probably not like pro war. And I understand that the military isn't just about war, but the military is also about war, and militaries have been proven to do some horrific things in the name of war. And sometimes not even in the name of war, but in the name of war. So by the same logic, you are condoning all of those things if you participate in the military night. I am extremely disappointed and infuriated that the NHL has chosen to cater to 7 players who last year opted to not skate in warm-ups to wear a pride jersey and in turn did not get to play in one game. One game out of 82. They didn't get fined. They didn't get suspended. They didn't lose a game contract. They didn't lose sponsorships. Nothing happened to them besides missing a game. But now the NHL is sending a message when for years they have ran ad campaigns, hockey is for everyone, and talked about their inclusion efforts. And yesterday the NHL, and they doubled down on it today with clarifying questions during media availability by the NHL front office. They doubled down on it. And they have sent a clear message that hockey is not for everyone. That hockey is not for everyone. And that hockey is not inclusive. That's a hard pill for me to swallow, being that it's my favorite sport. That's tough. I am invested in this sport. I'm invested in the Washington Capitals and Alex Ovechkin's chase towards a goal record. But I'd be lying if I said that I am, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't struggling with being a hockey fan today in this decision. What's been really cool, though, over the last and this is where I'll start to wrap up this thought, is over the last 24 hours, there's been a few fans, numerous fans, that have searched the 2023-2024 NHL rulebook and pointed out Rule 10.1 in regards to the player's stick. It reads, the sticks shall be made of wood or other material approved by the league and must not have any projections. Adhesive tape of any color may be wrapped around the stick at any place for the purpose of reinforcement or to improve control of the puck. I'll read that part again. I'll read that sentence one more time. Adhesive tape of any color may be wrapped around the stick at any place for the purpose of reinforcement to improve control of the puck. There's a report that numerous NHL players are planning on using pride tape despite the league's ban, such like giving the middle finger to Gary Bettman and league officials. I fully support that. I can't wait. Like I said, the season started tonight. With doing podcast stuff, I didn't have a chance to really watch any. I didn't see if any of the players tonight wore any or used any, but I'll be curious to see over the next few days as the season starts to really ramp up, if and who is choosing to give the league the finger. But those are my observations this week, and I thank you all for listening. And I certainly hope you will give me a follow at Big Jim Sports, but more importantly, follow the show at Huddle Up Podcast. Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok is at Huddle Up Podcast. We're on YouTube. We also got our merchandise over at tpublic.com. We're on all podcast platforms. You can hit the link tree in any of our social media or my Twitter, and you will find everything Huddle Up related. Until next week, I hope you have a good one. Take care of yourselves. And until next time, stay safe, stay smart, and go for the win.